Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of From My Point of View. A sad episode today. The deadline for the franchise tag has come and gone. It was Monday at 4 p.m., and Saquon Barkley did not reach a long-term deal with the New York Giants, which means nothing but anxiety and pain moving forward, because he might not play. It's going to come right down to the wire all the way into September. Probably we won't see him until week one. If he decides to play, he's not going to go into any type of team training camps or anything like that. Josh Jacobs, same thing. And Tony Pollard signed his franchise tag. So he is going to be playing for the Dallas Cowboys this year. He just didn't get a long-term deal. I'm sure he was hoping to maybe get one. But the Cowboys were in no rush to try and get that done. And honestly, I didn't really hear anything about Josh Jacobs or Tony Pollard other than, like, they didn't reach any deals. Saquon was the one that I felt like was more, national news. Like, obviously, I'm in New York and I'm a Giants fan, so that's what I'm paying attention to more. But even on, like, the national side of things, like on SportsCenter, ESPN, they would always constantly have updates about Saquon Barkley. Not much about anyone else, though. And Josh Jacobs, like, led the league in rushing, first team All-Pro. He was a beast last year, so you'd think maybe he'd have some more in-depth coverage in terms of, like, where they're at, what he's asking for. I haven't really heard about any of that. It sucks. Obviously, there's like a running back problem in the NFL in terms of paying them what they deserve versus, you know, what the position demands, which is a huge problem in disparity. A lot of running backs have come out in support of Jacobs and Saquon because it's just completely unfair. So like Eckler, Derrick Henry, who else? There were a couple other ones. Le'Veon Bell said some really weird shit about, like, A Bug's Life. Like, equating him and the running back landscape to A Bug's Life, which is just, it was so bizarre. But I know Eckler was really pissed about it. Saquon just said, he tweeted out, it is what it is, after the deadline passed and they didn't get a deal done. Eckler was really annoyed. Derrick Henry was really annoyed. Yeah, so just some really, like, it's some sensitive things, because we'll get into it in terms of, like, the landscape of the running back position and then paying it. D-Hop signed with the Titans. Carlos Alcaraz won Wimbledon at just 20 years old. He's only the fifth player in the past 20 years, basically, to have won Wimbledon, and he is 20 years old, so literally since he's been alive. Embiid said he wants to win a championship, whatever it takes, whether that's in Philly or somewhere else. Is he trolling? Is he not? We get to go into that. And then the Yankees are in last place because they stink. So, there you go. But let's start with Carlos Alcaraz, the 20-year-old Spaniard. He won his first Wimbledon title. He is just, since he's been alive for 20 years, since he has been alive, there have only been four tennis players to win Wimbledon. Rafael Nadal, Roger Federer, Andy Murray, and for the last four, Novak Djokovic. I almost said Nikola Jokic. Novak Djokovic has won the past four Wimbledon titles. And only three other guys, Nadal, Federer, and Murray, have actually won at Wimbledon. And now, Carlos Alcaraz. Nike came out already with they had a great ad already printed out for if he won. You know, don't just be a part of an era. Start your own. Fire. Like, just do it. Nike on top. That's a great one. A great campaign to really start off. But this kid's a beast. I didn't watch the French Open, but I think I read he lost to Djokovic at the French Open. Because Djokovic, he'd won the past two. Didn't he win the U.S. Open and the French Open, I think? Djokovic. So he was going for, honestly, the rise of Nikola Jokic is, like, really messing with my head. Djokovic and Jokic. I'm like, you can hear, you hear me studying a little bit. It's because I keep wanting to say Jokic, just on, like, instinct. Novak Djokovic had won, like, the past two majors, or the and he was going for, not majors, what are they, Grand Slams in tennis? Sorry. And he was going for Wimbledon now, again, for the fifth straight year, which I'm not, like, super in tune to tennis. I don't know if it was just, like, I kind of figured Djokovic was winning a bunch. I didn't realize he had won Wimbledon for four straight years. Like, that's insane. So, for Alcaraz to knock him off when he's on that kind of streak, it was a great... It was a great match. Really back and forth. Djokovic had a couple of moments later on where it felt like he was just gonna bounce back and, like, steamroll this kid. But Alcaraz was just able to outlast him, made some really great returns that, you know, went over Djokovic's head. He couldn't recover, or he would get him all the way into the corner and then hit, like, a soft one on the opposite end. He really great stuff. A good match. Celebrities in attendance galore. I think Tom Hiddleston was there. Brad Pitt was there. Who else? There was a bunch of actors and celebrities and whatnot. I think Ariana Grande was there. So it was a star-studded affair. Andrew Garfield, Emma Watson. So that's like a bucket list thing, I think. I'm not, like, a huge tennis guy, but, like, certainly going to the Wimbledon final is, like, for a normal person like myself, a once-in-a-lifetime experience, you know? That's because at that point, it's basically, like a celebrity event. You know, it's pretty cool. So that might be, like, a bucket list thing. Go to the Wimbledon final. Pretty fire. But Djokovic, his run of four comes to an end. And Alcaraz, he's a beast. Just 20 years old, man. Tennis is one of those things, one of those sports where, you know, these sensational players pop off just so young. And it's always interesting to me. It's like golf, too, whenever, like, a young golfer pops on. Like, because it's an individual sport. You know, you don't have to rely on anyone else to help you, or you don't have to be relied upon to help others succeed, like, so your team succeeds as a whole. It's literally just, like, me, 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 me. And it's all about you from, like, the moment you decide to pick up a tennis racket or a golf club or whatever. And it's just about you just getting better. And there's no one to blame if you can't get there other than yourself, which is also kind of tough, you know. But when you're there, it's, like, crazy, you know. There's no one to, like, you can credit, like, your coaches and, like, everything like that. But at the end of the day, it's, like, you willed yourself to this position, which is pretty sensational to think about. So congrats to him. Super dope Nike slogan ad for himself already. And, like, an iconic win, of course, for his, I think it was his second Grand Slam win, but first Wimbledon. So pretty dope. Let's get into this football situation, because it's the crux of this episode this week. So as I stated to open, Saquon Barkley with the Giants, Josh Jacobs with the Raiders, and Tony Pollard with the Dallas Cowboys. None of them received a multi-year extension with their teams. Now, I wanted to look it up just to make sure, because, you know, sometimes deadlines are weird. You know, they're like, oh, yeah, this is the deadline, but then, you know, there's buyouts and cuts, and you can still get to different places and stuff like that. This is one of those hard deadlines. So yesterday, July 17th, was the hard deadline at 4 p.m. that if you are franchise tagged, you have to sign your multi-year extension prior to this date. Otherwise, you have to wait until the end of the season to start negotiating again. And if you don't sign the franchise tag, then you are technically a free agent, but you can't sign anywhere else other than the team that gave you the franchise tag. So, Saquon Barkley, Josh Jacobs, they both intend to hold out of camp. So if they were to decide to play, it is, I don't see, that's the thing. Like, I don't, if they're going to play, they're going to, the point is that they're not going to like sign and then go into OTA or, like OTAs and training camp and risk injuring themselves. So they don't sign. And they hold out until the beginning of the season, and then maybe they sign it, and then they start playing, collecting their game checks. Because if they signed and they didn't want to play, because, you know, people get injured in workouts during spring training all the time. It happens a ton, unfortunately. So you don't want to risk that as one of these players. So by not signing, you don't get fined for missing these workouts and spring training. Not spring training. Well, yeah, technically spring training. It's not spring, summer workouts, you know, training camp. I keep saying spring training. Training camp. You don't get fined for missing those workouts if you're, because you're technically not signed to the team. And then if they were to play this year, and it just worked out so poorly for Le'Veon Bell. Like, that's the only time I really ever remember seeing that happen, where the Steelers and him, they didn't come to an agreement. He decided not to sign the franchise tag, and he sat out the entire year. And he got a bag from the Jets the next offseason, but he was never the same. His football career was essentially dead from that point forward. He did make some money, but he missed out on, you know, millions of dollars by not signing the franchise tag, and then also got a contract where he made some money, but not all of it, because he sucked and he got cut. So, or released, whatever it was. And his career was basically shot after that. He had no success anywhere else after he held out of the Steelers. Now, Josh Jacobs has a lot of mileage on him. He came off the best year of his career. Saquon Barkley has a major injury in his past with the ACL. He's been nicked up a couple times, but for the most part, over the last two seasons, he's been very healthy and he's been productive. Last year, he is the sole reason why the Giants were able to have the kind of offense that they had. Without him, I do not, like, unless Daniel Jones takes this astronomical leap this year, the Giants might not win five games without Saquon Barkley. He is, like, the X factor in their offense. So I don't really know how they're going to, like, balance that out if he decides not to play. And with Tony Pollard, he did sign the franchise tag. So Pollard did not come to an agreement on a multi-year deal, but he did get injured in the playoffs last year. Pretty nasty injury. He's, you know, going to be ready for training camp and week one and all that, but he is coming off that injury. He has not necessarily proven that he can handle the workload of a true RB1, because he was, even towards the end of the season when he really was the guy, he was still splitting snaps with Ezekiel Elliott. So now he's the guy. He's the number one back. He's going to get the number one back kind of workload. So the Cowboys obviously aren't going to be in a rush to dish out a multi-year contract for him. So he decided to sign the franchise tag and then just deal with it after the fact. Now, this brings in the running back problem, the running back issue. Matt Miller, let me just get up Austin Eckler's tweet because he's the one who responded to it. So he did me the huge solid of retweeting all the other running backs. So, well, this is Matt Miller, right? Matt Miller is a draft analyst for ESPN. Been saying it for years. One, draft a running back. Two, play the running back. And if he's good, franchise tag that running back one time and then repeat step one, draft a running back. Now, this it has been the prototype of how football teams have really been progressing. It's kind of a catch-22 that we're in right now because this is the way that things have been going. The NFL running back position is volatile because it is the only position left where you can really just go in and hit someone, right? You can't really hit receivers over the middle of the field anymore. You can't touch quarterbacks. So the only position left that you can really, for defensive players, put your head down and hit someone is the running back position. And the same for them, too. They get super physical. And running the football is an essential part to winning football games, especially in the playoffs. If you cannot run the ball effectively in the playoffs, you are not going to win, okay? It's just that simple. Now, here, look at the Chargers, by the way. They can't run the football. No offense to Austin Eckler. He's an excellent weapon, but he's not that good of a running back in terms of how he actually runs the football. So this is like bad, right? This is how the league has been trending. Don't give running backs second contracts. Draft them, run them into the ground, get rid of them, draft them again. Like, that's just, it's been discarded. So Austin Eckler, rightfully so, is this is the kind of trash that has artificially devalued one of the most important positions in the game. Everyone knows that it's tough to win without a top running back, and yet they act like we are discardable widgets. I support any running back do whatever it takes to get his bag. Now, the thing here is Warren Sharp goes, I think Warren Sharp responded and went on to say, like, this is why you don't get paid, because if like the devaluation and like your productivity drops off a cliff, and you know, look at the teams that have been winning, they don't pay running backs. And he's right, but he's also a moron, because you don't pay running backs big contracts because then it locks up your position. But to say that running backs, having a top tier running back doesn't help you win is not true. You need to have a good rushing attack to win football games, especially in the playoffs. You need to, okay? You don't necessarily have to have the highest paid running back. I get that. But the things with running backs that is happening right now is running backs are not getting paid for what they have done, like every other sport. Every other sport aside from football is you get paid for what you have done. And then based on what you have done, you get paid for that, and then you're expected or projected to put up those kind of similar stats moving forward based on your age, your position, and whatever. It happens in baseball, happens in basketball, right? If you're at a premier position and you've been putting up premier stats, you get paid for those stats and then are expected to do that moving forward. Football is just, everything is ass backwards because all the other contracts in basketball and baseball are guaranteed. Football is not fully guaranteed contracts, and it's also the only sport where you get paid for what you will do for a team. It's a what have you done for me recently league, right? It's not a it's not a what have you done for me or what have you done recently. It's what can you do for me in the future. It's the only league that's like that. And then on top of it, the contracts aren't guaranteed. And now you're talking about a position where injuries run rampant and productivity falls off after a certain point. It's kind of been pinpointed to this part is that it's 27, 28 years old is when running backs really start to fall off, which is sad because that's basically when you get your second contract is when you're at that age. So Derrick Henry said, at this point, just take the running back position out of the game. The ones that want to be great and work as hard as they can to give their all to an organization, it just seems like it doesn't even matter. I'm with every running back that's fighting to get what they deserve. Jonathan Taylor, one, if you're good enough, they'll find you. Two, if you work hard enough, you'll succeed. If you succeed, three, you boost the organization. And then it doesn't matter, you're a running back. Christian McCaffrey said, this is criminal. Three of the best players in the entire league, regardless of position. Talking about Jacobs, Barkley, and Tony Pollard. Najee Harris said, I agree with my running back brothers around the NFL. History will show that you need running backs to win. We set the tone every game and run through walls for our team and lead in many ways. This notion that we deserve less is a joke. So it's a really tough position to be in Because you need to be able to have a good running back to win. And the only reason why some of these teams, when they excel, is because they find these running backs diamonds in the rough. You know, later in the round, third, fourth, fifth round, you find a good running back that happens to break off and become really, really good. And now you pay them, and then it seems like their productivity jumps off a cliff. Now you now you're tied up in this money, or you got to eat this dead cap, whatever the problem is. So the notion of draft a running back, run them into the ground, tag them, and then draft another running back just seems like really, really like nerd shit to me. I'm sorry. Like, it's right, but it feels like just one of those things where you're not, now you're not like, it's not right. Like, it's morally and fundamentally not, like, not the right thing to do. You know, you're just churning these guys out. You're chewing them up and spinning them out, and then just replacing them like they're nothing. Why would people want to play the running back position at this point? You know, like, why would you want to do that? Austin Eckler is a unique case because Austin Eckler is a weapon in a lot of ways that most running backs in the league are not. Now, Saquon Barkley is that kind of weapon for the Giants. He can run the football. He can make things happen out of the backfield, passing, right? Lining up as a receiver in the slot or throwing a screen. Like, he makes shit happen. Austin Eckler is almost primarily a reception kind of guy. He had multiple games this year, like over five games this year, where he rushed for less than 50 yards. So he is like a different sense where he's mad because backup wide receivers are getting paid more than him. Like Russell Gage, you know, is getting paid more than Austin Eckler. Is that right? No, it's not. I think with Josh Jacobs and Saquon Barkley, they're exceptional at what they do. I think with Josh Jacobs, there's definitely more concern. Has he shown that he's slowing down? No, he just had the best season of his career. And he deserves to get paid. Saquon Barkley is more shocking to me that he didn't get a contract because the Giants have to know and realize that they're in trouble without Saquon Barkley. Like, there is no guy that can come in there and immediately replace his value to this offense. And it's about guaranteed money, which is like, I don't know, man. It's very, very, very sad and a difficult situation, especially like I'm trying to compartmentalize as a Giants fan and then, you know, as someone who understands why these decisions are made in the front office and stuff. Like, it is from a strict business standpoint, it is obvious why this happens, right? It is a volatile position. It is a pass-first league. And having a good running back is almost like a luxury right now, especially when you don't have to pay them. Like, they're on their rookie deals or whatever. But for a lot of these guys, not getting paid is like, you're ruining their professional lives. Like, you're just completely damning them to have to settle for less because of the position they play. And is running back an important position? Obviously, yes. It is very obvious that running back is an important position. And the nerds out there, the money nerds and the analytic nerds, will just point to all the past champions and be like, look at their running backs. None of them have high salaries. None of them are running backs that got paid. So paying for a running back does not win you championships. You're right, but that doesn't mean those running backs aren't good. Those running backs are very good and they deserve to get paid, but they don't because they're already on their control. They're on their rookie deals. So the idea of drafting a running back, high and paying for that when you can afford that luxury, it really rounds out your team. And then that is how you end up making deep playoff runs, because you can go out and get other pieces and other positions that you need, and then you have a good running back that's on a rookie deal, and you just get to take advantage of that. And then when they're done, you franchise tag them. They want security. You don't give it to them. And then they either sit out or they play under the franchise tag, and then they're a free agent and they get like basically pennies on the dollar for what they want in their next contract. It's a vicious, vicious cycle that has become a mainstay in the NFL, and it's really, really unfortunate for these guys. I don't know what the solution is. I saw people floating around like, make NFL running back rookie contracts 2 years instead of four. But all that does now is devalue their draft stock. So now guys aren't, you know, for just 2 years of control of a guy, why would I draft him in the first round for just 2 years of control, and then I have to pay him when I could just draft him, you know, then you end up drafting them in the third, fourth, fifth round, and now off the rip, they're getting significantly less more money. Now, if you ask these other running backs, would you rather have that? Because if you're only under 2 years of control, now the chances of you getting paid in the league are substantially higher, but you are also going to be getting paid significantly less, even if you are supremely talented in those first 2 years as a running back. So I don't know, man. I don't know what the solution is. I don't know how to fix it. I wish I did, but I don't. And I don't really think anyone else does either. Until either the rules change to try and help running backs stay healthy and have a longer career, then I don't know. It makes me think sometimes, because it's like, we'll never see someone like Frank Gore again. Frank Gore is a dude who played like well into his 30s and just had a really long, successful career where he got contract after contract and continued to play. Like, he played till he was 37 years old. Frank Gore. No major injuries other than in 2011, he only played 11 games, or in 2010, he only played 11 games for San Francisco. But other than that, 16, 15, 14, 14, 11, 15, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 14. He didn't miss a game from the ages of 29 to 34, which is unheard of nowadays. Like, it's just simply does not happen. The one guy that I could see maybe making a push for that, which you talk about the volatility, right? And how the position is, you know, you get injured a ton and bad things happen, injuries happen, productivity falls off, yada, yada. Ezekiel Elliott is someone who I'm shocked hasn't been given a contract. Yes, is he Zeke? Is he the same Zeke he was, you know, 6-7 years ago? No, he's not. When he first came into the league in like 2016, is he that still that same Ezekiel Elliott? No, he's not. He is definitely not. But the guy's missed like four games his entire career. Like, is that not worth something to a team that maybe has a running back with some injury history, has a running back that isn't necessarily going to be, like, can he be a workhorse if you have questions about it? Like, why not give Ezekiel Elliott a contract? Doesn't have to be for a lot of money. Doesn't have to be a long term. Could be only be for like a couple years. But the fact that this dude who's been a workhorse his entire career, yeah, he's not going to give you consecutive 100-yard games on the ground anymore. He doesn't have really breakaway speed anymore. I think a lot of that maybe might be to Zeke's diet and workout regimen, because he got big. He's not fat, but he got big. Like, he's definitely bulkier than he was when he was younger. And, you know, he's only 27, 28, but he has doesn't really have that breakaway speed anymore. But if you're going to look at me and say that he's not useful to a team, some team out there, that's crazy to me. Leonard Fournette's the same way. Like, the Jaguars paid Leonard Fournette and immediately were like, this was a mistake, and cut him. He went to Tampa Bay and he was a stud. And guess what? He helped them win a championship. Like, you need good running backs. So this concept that some of these guys, Dalvin Cook has had how many, 3 1,000-yard seasons in a row, and he's unsigned. Because the Vikings didn't want to pay him. 27 years old, again, like super young. He's had 4 1,000-yard seasons in a row. That's crazy to me. He's very, very, very good. 1,100 yards, almost 1,600 yards, 1,200 yards, 1,200 yards, just shy. That is, and the fact that he doesn't get a second contract is crazy. You know, it just doesn't make any sense. And then on the complete flip opposite end of the spectrum here, you have Joe Mixon. Now, Joe Mixon's in a bit of legal trouble. We have to see how that shakes out. I don't think anything's going to really happen to him for that. But he took a pay cut, a significant pay cut from the Bengals. He was scheduled to make like $10 million, a little over $10 million, almost $11 million this year. Took a pay cut. Now he's making a little less than $5 million a year now. And I think that, you know, in the most part is for the Bengals to kind of gear up to give Joe Burrow all the money they possibly have. But that's the kind of position you're forced to take, because Dalvin Cook didn't want to take a pay cut. So the Vikings said, see you later. And now Joe Mixon decided to take it and stay under wraps with the Bengals because, you know, the Bengals are a really good team and he's not going to find himself in a better situation than he is right now. But it's like there is no solution to the running back problem in the NFL right now. This is just like the way things are going. Do you think the Saints regret giving Alvin Kamara his contract? Because he was not nearly as productive as he had been in years past. I blame Dennis Allen and Taysom Hill and the fact that the Saints haven't really had a good quarterback since Drew Brees retired. They've been in this quarterback limbo where the rest of their roster is great, but they have no one to throw the football. Then Taysom Hill comes in and people insist that he is like an offensive weapon. So he just vultures red zone targets and opportunities from Alvin Kamara. So his productivity is way down. And it's not what he can be, what Alvin Kamara can be, but he's a weapon too. Like, he's a freak, Alvin Kamara. He's a monster. And now they signed him. Now he's in legal trouble. He just got no jail time. So and it got from a felony to a misdemeanor. So he's not going to see any jail time. He might still be suspended by the NFL, but even if he's not, like, he's not going to play out that contract. Is my point. We mentioned Joe Mixon, the opposite end, where he took a pay cut in his contract. DeAndre Hopkins, 3-time All-Pro DeAndre Hopkins, has signed a 2-year, $26 million deal with the Tennessee Titans. This is certainly a head-scratcher. I think it was down to, who was it down? Like the Patriots and Titans. I don't know. For whatever reason, it wasn't, it didn't seem like there was that big of a market for DeAndre Hopkins. Now, whether that's because he's slightly older, because he came off the suspension last year, even though he came off the suspension and balled out in his 9 games, he had like 717 yards, 64 catches in 9 games last year, which is really, really good. He's only 31 years old. Do I still think he's going to be productive? Yeah, I think so. He's DeAndre Hopkins. As far as I can tell, his physical ability has not really taken a hit much. A lot of people were kind of throwing their hands up. Like, why did the Chiefs not go out and and sign him to a contract. Like, why not? Because there's no real clear wide receiver one in Kansas City. As much as people would like to hang their hat on Kadarius Toney somehow being good, he doesn't stay on the field. He can't. He physically cannot do it. I promise you he won't be able to do it again this year. He's not going to be... And I'm not even saying because of injuries, even though injuries... The way he moves, his body is, like, bound to get injured. But... He just simply is not going to be running enough routes to be considered a wide receiver one. He's going to be like special packages. You know how Andy Reid and Mahomes, they love to get cheeky. That's what they use him for, right? So there is a reason that, or I should say, there isn't a reason that I could think of that the Chiefs wouldn't just go out and get DeAndre Hopkins. You tell me they couldn't sign him for 2 years for $26 million? They have no clear wide receiver one outside of, obviously, Travis Kelce is their tight end, and he is Mahomes' number one target. But could you imagine Nuke on that team? Oh, my God. It would be gross. Gross. They would be, like, they would be unbelievable, like, even more so than they already are. So, I mean, listen, it could be a cap situation. But given the contract that he got from Tennessee, I can't imagine the Chiefs don't have that money lying around that they could use to throw at him. But they decided not to. He didn't want to go to the Patriots. He went to the Titans. Now, I'm not saying the Titans are like a horrible team where it's like, I can't believe he went there. They're going to be so bad, yada, yada, yada. They're not. I think everyone and their mother is kind of expecting the Jags to take that extra leap to where, you know, Trevor Lawrence is, he takes that extra step to now, because you saw him at the end of last year, he really turned it on. The Jags got into the playoffs, they won a playoff game, it was electric for them, right? You're kind of expecting now Trevor Lawrence to start off the year like he ended last year, and then also take a little bit extra of a step. Like, you are expecting, I think everyone is expecting the Jags to more or less dominate that division from the beginning of the year to the end of the year. Are there going to be some hiccups along the way? I wouldn't be surprised. They are still a young team. So if they, you know, lose a couple games that you should, that they are expected to win, that's not going to surprise me. But they are definitely the team that I think everyone's looking to win that AFC South. But the Titans are incredibly well coached by Mike Vrabel. They have a solid roster. Derrick Henry, for all intents and purposes, I think Derrick Henry is just in line to have another good year. He's like that. You know, if Ryan Tannehill doesn't get injured, who knows what, like, the Titans probably win that division. The only reason why the Jaguars were able to make that push at the end of the season is because the Titans had Malik Willis and then Josh Dobbs thrown in there at the end of the year, just trying to scrape together a win, but their offense was basically useless. They couldn't do anything offensively. They were completely useless. So you have to think that Ryan Tannehill being healthy gives them, obviously, a much better chance to win. Did he struggle at points last year? Yeah, he did. But he is significantly better than Malik Willis, who is... Malik Willis's time in the NFL, I think, is done. It is very, you know, the Titans took a flyer on him, but it's obvious that his talent has not translated to the NFL level. So they're with Ryan Tannehill now. He's got a, he's good enough for the Titans to be good. Like, he's going to get DeAndre Hopkins the ball, I think, if he stays healthy. And then, you know, obviously now, In the second string, they have Will Levis, who they drafted in the first pick, I think, in the second round, or the second pick in the second round, whatever it was. Are they going to be? I think they'll have the illusion of a quarterback competition, but at the end of the day, I'm pretty sure Ryan Tannehill has that position locked up. I don't think Will Levis is someone who can just come in and immediately start for their team. Hell, I don't think Anthony Richardson's a guy who can come in and immediately start for their team. And he got drafted inside the top five. So it's a weird position to be in for Tennessee. You have your, well, Ryan Tannehill, let me see. I think this is the last year of his massive contract he has. And if that's the case, then you're good. It is. He has an out. So for this 2023 year, he's getting paid $27 million, and then he has a potential out after 2023, where the Titans, I think, would eat like $18 million in dead cap. Yeah, 2024, 2025 years automatically voided, 9.2 of dead cap. So they'll probably take that with Ryan Tannehill, and this will be his last year as a Titans quarterback if they trust Will Levis. Obviously, if he, there'll be cause for concern if he just doesn't play well in practice, if he's just not showing any signs of improvement. And if the Titans just aren't in the playoff picture because they're not very good, then there's a huge chance, a huge possibility that he gets playing time towards the end of the season. But I would be surprised if the plan was anything other than letting Ryan Tannehill go, because for the most part, since he's been their quarterback, the Titans have been good. Like, they've dominated that division since he's been there. They've won a couple of playoff games, and they're a good team. Derrick Henry's obviously a freak, and, you know, he gets older now, so the red flags start to raise, as we've previously established. But yeah, it's interesting. I don't know. That's an interesting spot to be in for DeAndre Hopkins. You'd think that he'd go to a place maybe where he had a better chance to win. Clearly didn't want to go play for the vet minimum, because he could have went anywhere to, you know, he could have went to the Chiefs on the vet min if he wanted to. He could have went somewhere else, wherever, you know, the Ravens on the vet minimum. He could have went to a bunch of places on the vet minimum, but he didn't. He took an actual contract with the Tennessee Titans. So I think that definitely helps the Titans. I think adding him into the mix definitely gives their offense a huge boost. They're going to be battling with the Jags. So there you go. Someone that I forgot that was also waiting for a multi-year contract that did come to he's the only one who did come to a settled contract with their team after being franchise tagged, is Evan Engram. So Evan Engram didn't sign his franchise tag, and he came, I think he got a 3-year deal from Jacksonville. He had the best year of his career. Doug Peterson really unlocked what Evan Engram could be when the Giants drafted him. And Doug Peterson was able to do that. If Evan Engram was on the Giants with Brian Daboll, then I have no doubt that he could have unlocked the potential that Evan Engram had. But his time with the Giants was just filled with far too many drops and missed opportunities. So for him to be on the Jags, good for him for getting a contract. So moving to basketball, there's this one topic of information that was being thrown around, as in Joel Embiid trolling, probably again. Everyone's going crazy off this comment that he made where he said, "I want to win a championship, whatever it takes, whether that's in Philly or somewhere else. It's not easy, but I work towards it every day." People went absolutely goo goo gaga over the "or somewhere else" part of the quote, and Joel Embiid took to Twitter, actually, which he's been kind of silent on, but he goes, "We're in this together forever, 5 days," and then someone said, "I'd like to win a championship in Philly or somewhere else. The somewhere else was unnecessary, to be honest." And he said, "Buddy, check my middle name." And on Twitter, his middle name is Joel, quote, Troel Embiid. Troel, you know. So he's trolling. Apparently, he says he's trolling. And then he followed that up with, I've lost my place as best troll here, though, and it went to at Daryl Morey. That's that. I guess that's not much to say. There was going to be some talk about, hey, where should Embiid go, or what's the deal? Like, if he wants to be completely committed to Philadelphia for his entire career, that's awesome. I love that. I don't think too many players do that anymore, and there are a lot of reasons. It's not always like the player's fault, you know, like, they want to leave. They want to go team up with their friends. They want to create a super team. They want to go to this franchise, yada, 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 yada. It's not always about that. Sometimes it just doesn't work out between the franchise and the player and they have to leave. I think it's cool. I think it's awesome when players can stay with one franchise for their entire career. That's why I was kind of messed up when Tom Brady went to the Bucks. I was a little upset, even though I don't care about the Patriots and their successes. You know, I'm a Giants fan. But it's like, I had these three players growing up that I thought were always going to be in those jerseys forever, right? Tom Brady with the Patriots, Jeter with the Yankees, and Kobe with the Lakers. And two out of those three came true. Jeter and Kobe never wore another uniform. And that to me was just like this part of my childhood that was like, wow, it's so crazy that these three different sports, I've had these three unbelievable players I've been able to grow up and kind of watch as they went from early in their careers to late in their careers, and I never saw them in another uniform. And then Brady went to the Bucks, and he won a championship, but it's a little different. You know what I'm saying? It's not the same as him being a Patriot. But if Joel Embiid wants to be a Sixer for life, more power to you, bro. I think that city really needs someone like that that will stay to the end and just try their best. And he certainly tries. You know, I think this last playoff run really hurt him. Because he had a sensational year. I think he definitely should have won MVP. I think it's a little bit weird. I think Jokic probably should have won MVP this year, but Embiid certainly should have won it last year over Jokic. But Jokic had a better year this year than he did last year, and it just turned like Embiid had to get one. You know, he can't finish third in MVP voting, or he can't finish second in MVP voting 3 years in a row. He can't. Like, that's just not right. You know, and especially, I thought he should have won it this year, and Jokic should have won it. He should have won it last year. Jokic should have won it this year, but that's not the way it broke down. So they had to give it to him this year, which I totally understand. And people who are like, "That's not the way it's supposed to work," yada yada yada. You don't just get over it, bro. It's just sometimes the MVP doesn't go to who the MVP should go to because narrative is involved in the whole thing, and the media dictates it. And once the media dictates it, then that's the end of it. And is it right? No, obviously it's not right. But if the MVP were to go to the real best player every single year, LeBron would have like LeBron, Jordan, and like Kareem would probably have 10 each. You know what I'm saying? Larry Bird would have Magic, and Larry Bird would have 5 each. You know, they'd split the entire 80s together. That's just how things would go. So, is it fair? No. Is it how it goes? Yes. Get over it. But for him to say something like that, I don't necessarily believe he's trolling. I think that is something that just normal people say. You know, because things happen in sports where relationships deteriorate and teams, you know, a lot of players don't want to stick around on a team no matter how loyal they can be. They don't want to stick around on a team that has nothing to play for. Look at Damian Lillard. He's like the prime example here where he was just like, loyalty, 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 loyalty. And now, finally, the Blazers are throwing in the towel, so to speak, and saying, we're going to rebuild. And Damian Lillard's like, okay, trade me. After all this time. You know, I think that whole... I am on a weird side with Damian Lillard. Not to get off Joel Embiid right now, but I'm on a weird side with Damian Lillard, where I think he's been really holding that franchise and that fan base hostage for quite some time. Preaching about, I'm loyal. I want to stay in Portland. I'm loyal. I'm doing this. And not really giving Portland the chance to be like, we should trade him if we're not going to win. Like, take a step back if you're the Portland front office and really look at the roster. Let's go back 3 years ago. You really look at that roster, right? In the bubble, after the bubble, and say, can we win with this team? Can we really win a championship with this team? When they got rid of CJ McCollum, they should have gotten rid of Damian Lillard. That's how I feel, personally. Because they were like your 1-2 punch. You built the team around them. They made some, you know, they won some playoff series. They made some playoff runs. But at the end of the day, that roster just was never going to be able to get you to an NBA Finals. So when you shipped CJ McCollum off to New Orleans, you should have also traded Damian Lillard. But what happened was Damian Lillard preaches about loyalty and I want to stay in Portland and I'm dedicated to be here to try and win with this team. Now you've pinned your ownership. He has pinned your ownership in a corner to where it's like, if we trade him, people are going to hate us. They're going to ridicule us. They're going to stop coming to games. They're going to be pit, blah, blah, blah. Like, you're going to be in a firestorm. So the GM probably would get fired. The owner would be in hot water in terms of, like, what to do. The head coach is going to be in a trash position because now you're going to have a terrible team. And then he's going to get fired at some point. It creates a whole mess. So rather than just trade Damian Lillard like you should have 2 or 3 years ago, they decided to double down and be like, we're committed to winning with Damian. He's our guy. We're committed to winning. We're going to try and build around him. And now here you are with a young team and this massive contract with Damian Lillard, who you suddenly are told, hey, I want to go to Miami by Lillard. I want to go to Miami. Trade me in Miami. Are you now required? They've already made the decision. They're not required to stay loyal to Damian Lillard. They're going to they're going to trade him to whoever has the best offer. And that's like the way it should be, but this is a move that should have been done 2 years ago. This rebuild has been delayed because Portland just flat out has not been good the past 2 years. They haven't been. And part of the reason of that is because Lillard's been banged up. But like I said, if once you got rid of McCollum, you should have traded Lillard also. Blow the entire thing up. Be bad. Evaluate your young talent and just go and try and draft. And now they're in this predicament where it's like, are you going to trade him to Miami to be like, to fulfill that request to him? And a lot of people say, well, if they don't, then you're not going to be able to get anyone to sign to Portland in the future. No one signs in Portland anyway. No one wanted to go play with Damian Lillard when he was there. So who cares about that? Just get whoever you want, right? Back to Embiid. After that whole little Damian Lillard tangent, I've said all of that before, but with Joel Embiid, he is in a position now where he won his MVP, but just had like this horrific collapse in the playoffs where I don't know what it was. I think part of it was Doc Rivers. Suddenly people turned they went a complete 180 on Doc Rivers, where, you know, 2 years ago when they lost to the Hawks and Ben Simmons got a lot of the blame, but so did Doc Rivers. And now suddenly they fired him and people were like, well, I don't really think it was Doc Rivers' fault that he was the Sixers blew it against the Celtics. Like, what? Doc Rivers is cooked, bro. He is not a good coach anymore. I'm sorry. He'll win you some regular season games, but he is not a dude that can win you playoff series. Multiple playoff series to get you to the finals and even then win the finals. His coaching methods do not work anymore. They don't. They just fall apart. The moment he gets matched up with a coach that actually knows what they're doing, he gets smoked. He gets absolutely cooked. Like, he has no answer. So, now, I don't blame him for the Celtics playoff loss specifically. I think that definitely falls more onto the Embiid Harden area of blame. Because they, I mean, the fact that the two of them were not able to win just one more game, there's no reason why they should have lost, you know, two in a row to the Celtics. They just shouldn't have. And they shit the bed twice. Like, it shouldn't have happened. But with, or was it a 3-1 lead they blew? I think it was, right? So yeah, that that's even worse. But they, I think that falls more on them, because I'm not going to sit here and say Joe Mazzulla outcoached Doc Rivers. He didn't. Joe Mazzulla basically just said, please, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, do something, you know? But it was like really, really just tough to watch, honestly. And it just felt like Embiid wasn't getting the ball. So now you have James Harden, who opted out of his contract. I don't really feel like talking about the playoffs anymore. We all know how it went. So James Harden opted out of his contract. If I'm the Sixers, I'm not paying James Harden. Flat out. And as much as maybe that would annoy Joel Embiid, Harden's going to be asking for like close to a max contract. And there's just no reason for the Sixers to pay him that kind of money. There's just not. I'm sorry. I would trade everything in the world to go get Damian Lillard. Everything. You want to talk about something that is... If you're an Eastern Conference team, do the Heat have a better chance with Lillard, or do the Sixers have a better chance with Lillard? I think the Sixers have a great chance with Damian Lillard, and also the Heat have like basically no one to offer. Max Strus left in free agency. Gabe Vincent left in free agency. Who are you offering to the Portland Trailblazers? Those draft picks aren't really coveted unless it's like a really down the road, like 3-4 years down the road, first round pick, when by the time it's 3-4 years down the road, Jimmy's going to be older, Damian Lillard's going to be older, and Bam's going to be in his early 30s. So by that time, then it's like, or Bam might be 30 at that time, but Butler will be like 36, 37, and Lillard will be like, you know, 35, whatever it is. Then maybe those first round picks will be worth something because the Heat might not be as good. But for the first couple of seasons, if they're together, those draft picks mean absolutely nothing. So you get the Heat. Who the Heat have to offer? Tyler Hero and like every draft pick, every first round draft pick under the sun until 2030? But what do you have? The Sixers have at least a little bit more to deal with in terms of some of their younger players, but I don't know. All signs point that the Sixers are going to re-sign Harden and try and run it back. I don't think they should do that. But I don't really know if they're in a position to have the choice. So they're obviously a great team. I think they're super talented. I'm excited to see how they play with a coaching change. But generally speaking, like, it sucks because Harden's going to ask for a lot of money that I don't really think he's currently worth at this point in his career, especially from what you saw from, like, he single-handedly won you two games and lost you two games by being so good and so terrible. So I don't really know what to make of it. But yeah, it's a interesting situation you got going on there in Philadelphia. In Philadelphia or somewhere else. And then he went on to Twitter and say he was trolling. We'll see. Because if he asks for a trade at some point, I'm not saying this year, but just like eventually down the road, people are like, well, he wasn't actually trolling then, was he? He just tried to cover it up, blah, 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 blah. But yeah, all right. To wrap up the pod, Yankees are in last place. They suck. It is the latest they've been in last place in a season in quite some time. And, you know, they're not even under 500. Obviously, they play in the best division in baseball, which I think needs to be taken with a grain of salt. I was watching Carton's show on FS1, which has basically taken over that channel because he left WFAN for the fat bag that Fox Sports gave him. That show sucks. That show is so bad. And I liked Carton on radio, but oh man, that show stinks. It's not good, bro. They don't know anything about anything. It was a tough watch. I didn't like it. So they were just talking about, you know, it's just funny when they talk about baseball, you know, they don't really know what they're saying. But they were talking about the Yankees, and it's just like, it's so funny when the Yankees get brought up around people who don't know, who get paid to talk about sports that don't know anything about baseball. 'Cause then they just say, well, they need to go get Ohtani. They need to go do this. Like, they're in last place. They're horrible. Like, they're 7 games above 500. They're not playing great baseball. I'm not going to sit here and say they are. They're certainly not as bad as some of the actual real bad teams in the league. Like, the Mets are actually bad. The Mets are bad. The Yankees are not as bad as the Mets. But by Yankee standards and also by where they stack up in their own division, they are bad. Yes. But when you take the league as a whole, they're just an average team. They're an average baseball team. Aaron Judge his injury has significantly derailed this season, which is, you know, when you gave him this massive contract, that was a cause for concern. Is he going to be injured? Is he going to be able to stay healthy and play a majority of the games like he did last year, where he had a sensational year and won MVP? That was the worry, and here we are, like, in the middle of July, and Aaron Judge has been injured for over a month, and the Yankees stink. So, as a fan, I wouldn't mind the Yankees finishing in last place. Because it might finally be the wake-up call that Hal Steinbrenner needs to really hit him over the head and be like, this is not working. Because for the last 5 seasons, 6 seasons, the Yankees have been essentially running out the same lineup over and over and over again with 1 or 2 tweaks every year or so and expecting different results. You need guys that can hit the baseball. And it was so funny, I talked about people who get paid to talk about sports but don't know anything about baseball. Colin Cowherd came on after Carton's show talking about the running back position, and he equated it to baseball changes. Everyone wants, you know, he does his Colin Cowherd voice. He's like, everyone wants to pay the guys who hit the home runs. What would Tony Gwynn fetch in a market like this? Wade Boggs. And I was like, Tony Gwynn was hitting like 380 on average. The dude was a freak. He just knew how to hit a baseball. You're paying a lot of money. You're paying a premium for Tony Gwynn. Still, to this day, nothing changes with Tony Gwynn, I assure you, okay? Just because he's not hitting home runs doesn't mean he's not going to get paid a lot of money. He's Tony Gwynn. Like, there's no one in the league that's hitting over 350 aside from Luis Arraez, who's hitting like 380, right? Like, it's a premium to be able to hit for average like that. Just because you're hitting home runs doesn't mean you're not hitting, you're getting big bucks. And also, the money ball thing is making its way to the back burner. It is a tactic that is no longer being applied by every single team because they've slowly realized that, hey, maybe it's better if, I don't know, you got guys who actually played baseball in a well-rounded way. Get good pitching, get a good bullpen, put the ball in play. That's all you need to win. Like, look at some of the teams that have won recently. They put the ball in play. It's not all about the long ball. So the whole Yankees persona of hit home runs and hit the ball hard got their hitting coach fired, which I think is a last-ditch effort to kind of fix things. But if the Yankees finish in dead last with this roster, can Cashman save his job by basically saying, well, we were injured and we can't account for injuries, but if we're healthy, we're going to be a championship contending team? Can he save his job with that argument? My answer hopefully is no. Is he going to? Yes, probably. I hope it doesn't happen, but I mean, he's probably going to play out this entire contract that he got. He got a brand new deal at the end of last year when I thought he should have been fired. He got a brand new deal, and he's probably going to play out the entire contract. I would be shocked if he didn't, but ideal, like, listen, he doesn't have to get fired, you know? If finishing in dead last is a wake-up call to him that he needs to revamp this entire roster top to bottom, then that is awesome. Like, great. Now do something about it. But if he's going to quadruple down, quintuple down on his strategy that this roster can work if everyone plays up to their potential and... yeah. Whoop-de-doo, buddy. If every MLB player that ever existed played up to their potential, you know how many, you know how history would be different? Come on. Like, that excuse that he uses is crazy to me. If everyone stays healthy and plays up to their potential, we can win a championship. You're living in la-la land, bro. It just does, that the way things work. It's just not. So he needs to either be canned or finally have this awakening that, hey, this isn't working anymore. Let's revamp top to bottom, because there are a lot of players that need to go. If he can somehow, you know, ship out some guys too, that would be great. And if you got to eat some money, then so be it. Because you know what, Hal Steinbrenner, you just ruined the best Yankee uniform, the best jersey of all time, by putting a star insurance patch on the sleeve for like $20-25 million a year. So maybe you can eat some change. You got that extra income coming in. How about that? How about you eat the money to get rid of some of these players so you can have a better baseball team? Because you got that extra 25 mil coming in for ruining a goddamn jersey. The most historic and iconic jersey in all of sports. Ruining it with a disgusting insurance package because you want an extra $25 million a year. The richest owner in baseball. Congratulations, dude. Pathetic. And I'm ending it on that note. I don't even want to talk about this. I hope the Yankees finish in last place. That'll do it for this episode from my point of view. Thank you all very much for listening. I appreciate you as always. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. I hope it somehow gets sunny, because on the East Coast, it's just been horrible, horrible weather since June. It's rain and gross and just, it feels like Florida, but without the actual sun part. So enjoy the rest of your week, your weekend, and we'll talk to you all next Tuesday. I don't wanna lose my mind, but without this girl named Molly, I cannot feel my face. Mama, I'm sorry, I cannot feel my body. I'm in the party, I'm up two shots of Molly. I'm feeling awesome, made his way to the coffin. AP or Frosty, I'm on my way so tardy. Mama, I'm sorry, I cannot feel my body. I'm in the party, I'm up two shots of Molly. Feeling awesome, made his way to the coffin, yeah. AP or Frosty, right? I'm always so tardy, yeah. I hate being sober, I'm a smoker. I'm not a drinker, but I'm on that water. Guitar, they know us. Robberies and Rovers, Robberies and Rovers.